Sierra, tell us about ghost meat. I mean, not the concept. Well, maybe the concept too, but the actual piece.
How do you like it prepared?
You know, I'm fascinated by this concept of meat. I mean, you start with Kerouac talking about the wheel of meat and with the Buddhist overtones, you know, and McClure, who I guess took that from Kerouac in Buddhism, with "I love this meat of which I'm made. I dive in it to find the simplest vital shape," you know, stuff like that. So, so meat has a fine tradition in my literary preferences. But for you, it was just a barbecue opportunity missed, or what?
many opportunities missed, many sort of embodied by the nostalgia of a barbecue not gone to. Maybe I should also divulge that I'm vegetarian, so meat has its own. But I didn't grow up vegetarian, but I've been for.
Where did you grow up? But,
mostly in Nevada, Carson City, and Reno. But I've been in Seattle for over 14 years now.
So 6 years as a vegetarian in Nevada.
So I was not vegetarian in Nevada.
Oh, I see.
So that's only in later years.
I gotcha.
Yeah, but about 20 years.
And you know, you don't always hear put another skewer of tofurkey on the Barbie. That's just not something that goes around a lot. So now that adds a little dimension to the piece. So ghost meat. It is.
Should I
read it? Sure, why not?
Okay. Ghost meat. The ghost meat of all the barbecues we didn't go to haunts our days, trails us on the train, hangs around like a smoky weight in our bellies. Once I made you a soup which could never be replicated. It was made of the ends of everything, some of it fresh and some of it very old. Olives were a surprise ingredient. Every bite was like saying you wished you could stay and meaning it. The spoon made a satisfying sound against the ceramic bowl. There was nothing sorry about that soup.
Now you go back to the notion of something that affects you on a body level. Those sensory things like the sound of the spoon, those are kinds of things to me which elicit a different kind of sensory response that I think you're getting to, or you were getting to in that discussion earlier. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, the word meat is just one of the most visceral words, both musically and meaningfully, that you could possibly choose. And goat, like ghost being a sort of ethereal word, right next to meat, you have both of those things going on. Which is one of the reasons why I loved the poem and I thought it should be in Page Boy magazine.
Yeah, those are the kind of things you look for. You look, I mean, immediately something very interesting that you hadn't seen before, I would say, right? Yeah. Some of the famous poets that have been published in Page Boy are people like Loreen Nedeker. And of course, she spent her whole life not far from where you grew up.
Milwaukee.
In Fort Atkinson, yeah. So, first of all, how did you end up publishing her, and how do you solicit work or find work or get work from other important folks? And maybe you could talk about those folks who've been in the magazine.
Well, usually I get people's work from hearing people's work at readings. That's my preferred method of finding people. And then I can chat directly with them, and I try to go to as many readings as I can of all those different factions that I was talking about, and scout. And actually the ALS? I always want to say MLS. MLA.
That was about a year ago.
Yeah. That was an editor's dream, because remember the
offside reading.
Yeah, did you
read
it?
Yeah, I remember the flute player. Yeah.
Yeah, everybody got 3 minutes, right?
I think it was 3 minutes.
You didn't read it though.
Yeah. Melanie Noel did, Nico did, a lot of local, Robert Mittenthal, and then a lot of folks who were out of town.
Like,
from out of town.
At least 30 people.
Yeah, and it probably was more. I think it went on for at least 3 hours, and many people went over.
Yeah.
And you just want to throttle them when they go over.
Yeah. But it was great. It was great for me as an editor, not so much as an audience member, but as an editor, because it did go on forever. But I could. It's like getting. It's like going to the market and just having poets paraded in front of you, and you can sort of choose what you like, and then I give them a magazine and tell them how much I like them, blah blah blah, blah, and hopefully they send me their work. That's usually how it happens and how I prefer it to happen. But also, like, you hooked me up with Jose Kozer and Michael McClure, and that also happens when, and Rebecca Brown has referred me to different people, and everybody actually, you know, will refer me to different people, or they'll hand someone a copy of the magazine, and then I'll get a letter with the submission saying, oh, hi, I'm a friend of Paul Nelson's, he gave me a magazine and I really liked it, and so I thought I would send my work, et cetera, et cetera.
So networking, essentially.
Yes, yeah. Essentially. But I also want to add that an editor, I believe that an editor, like a magician, never reveals his secrets. And that's all I'll say.
I understand. And Laureen Niedeker, oh, so you're not going to mention Laureen
Niedeker?
Correct. Oh, I gotcha.
Correct.
So, is there a litigation?
You can give me the evil eye as long as you want.
Mal de ojo for Thomas Waldo. Well, all right. Talk about the visual elements. Let me just say that it's so beautiful every time. I mean, that edition with that edition. What was that?
The third issue.
The third issue, number 11 or 2011. I mean, tell me again the name of this. This
Shannon Perry's, the artist, the watercolor portraits
of faces. Yeah, this is. It's just. There's just something striking. Not so sure I'd want that hanging on my wall at the house, but I, you know,
you
I
mean,
I,
if you were that guy,
or if I were anyone,
oh, okay.
That guy, I don't know. I mean, it's a little bit post office esque, uh-huh, you know, but still beautiful and striking. And then. Uh-huh. In the latest, the slide photography, tell mm-hmm. me again the name of the gentleman.
George Giardi.
Yeah, George Giardi. Just strikingly beautiful work.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
And then, you know, published in full color, this has got to be, you know, a pretty penny to get this stuff out there.
It's more expensive than an online journal.
I understand.
Yes. But I do all the labor myself, so all I pay for is paper and print, and then postage after the magazine comes out. But I actually, the magazine's getting better, I think, graphically, because I have taught myself how to be a graphic designer. So the first couple issues were not very good, I think. And they're getting better and better and better. And I'm really happy with that. And I'm really happy with the quality of the printer that I'm using too, so I'm fortunate in that regard.
And how would you describe what interests you visually, and how it gets in the magazine?
Good question, because it's my tastes for art are not necessarily what I think work in a magazine. So that's always a challenge to find not only something that I feel like would look great in a gallery, but also that can reproduce in a 5.5 by 8.5 format. And strangely, and not, I mean, I have to say that one of the things I look for is something that violates that idea of don't judge a book by its cover. Like, I do choose things to look good on the cover that hopefully people will judge the book by looking at the cover and saying, oh, wow, that's compelling. Or, oh, wow, look at that. What's going on here? It's very colorful. My eyes are attracted to it. I think that in a visceral sense, I think we're all sort of vulnerable to that, even though the adage says we shouldn't be. I think we're helpless against it. So I do, because I have to sell magazines, so I do have to sort of let the magazine be attractive. And I wouldn't necessarily... I'm looking for work that can be satisfying both superficially and in a more profound way.
Yeah, in a way that reflects the work itself. You're talking about it, you know, at one level being accessible, but there have to be real ideas behind it for it to be successful.
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
And one note about George Chardy, whose work is published, whose slide photography is published, and the story that he told at the last Pageboy release party, which was December 1st at Kaleidoscope Vision, and your ability to create events and to manage events, which is also a very rare skill, I think. Here in the Northwest, we tend to be polite and not want to cut people off. And he told this story, which to me was so visceral, about trying to get a shot on the south side of Chicago and running into some tough types, as you can in a city of that size, and having to get the hell out of there. And then he wanted to tell another story, and you cut him off, and you said, no, you're not going to be able to top that. But it was a perfect opportunity to end, really. Uh-huh. And there was just this sense of how to keep an event going. So that's also kind of a skill that you don't see in the typical magazine editor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, the events are a whole another interview we could have, because right. It's also a headache.
I can imagine. Yes,
but worth it. I mean,
but, taking
part or attending. I really appreciate having the visual art element both in the magazine, but also as a presence at the happenings. I mean, like Drew Christie showing his animations live was a really amazing part of that particular release, and seeing these photographs from the most recent issue displayed and hearing a little bit more about that process. It just felt like that widened the community too. So it's not just poets talking to more poets, even if they're from sort of different backgrounds, but that also a really nice cross-pollination of the visual artists too. And that's one thing that I love about being in Seattle, is that it's a big enough city that there are people doing work that you don't know at all, but it's small enough that eventually you can find some way to connect, or you know that there's a lot of ways where the arts can come together and not be as isolated as maybe some other cities.
That's really interesting that you talk about that, because the sparks really begin to fly when there's a slam guy in the room and somebody from UW-Bothell or Subtext, that school, and a couple of other different schools. And we may have seen their name, but we maybe never heard their work because we don't go to the slam anymore and we never get to Bothell or whatever. And your notion about how community is built by those connections is really interesting, because I'm going to remember that evening for a long time, and that was a lot of fun. And I do remember Paul Constant sitting there scribbling and taking a lot of notes, and then nothing for over a month, and then all of a sudden, boom, it's the best magazine. And it's like, holy shit, how does this happen? Mm-hmm. Very interesting.